Newsday presents the Island Ice Podcast with Andrew Gross.
And welcome to Island Ice, episode 188 of Newsday's New York Islanders Podcast, broadcasting live from my car as I drive home with my Newsday colleague, Neil Best. Hi, I'm Andrew Gross of Newsday, and over the next few minutes, Neil and I are going to dissect what happened in the Islanders' 3-2 loss in Game 3 at UBS Arena as the Islanders' season now is pushed up against the brink heading into Saturday afternoon's Game 4. And Neil, I guess we got to start with the goalies and Patrick Waugh's decision to start Ilya Sorokin, which I guess, to use a verb, backfired like a car.
Yeah, we'll get to the Ferrari and Cadillac stuff soon. But yeah, I mean, it was actually, you know, for those of us who have to like write narratives for a living, it couldn't have been easier. I mean, if I had a vote, I would have voted to start Varley in this game, but I did not think it was like some sort of crazy irresponsible decision on Patrick Waugh's part, so I can't kill him for the decision because I wasn't killing him for it beforehand. That being said, it could not have gone any, there is no possible way it could have been worse. I mean, when you have Sorokin give up 3 goals and then Varley 0 in a game in which the Islanders outplayed the Hurricanes, I mean, again, for us, it's almost too easy. And you know, it was really Patrick Waugh's lowest moment since he got here. It just didn't. He made a big decision, and it sure as heck did not work.
No, 3 goals on 14 shots for Ilya Sorokin, and you know, to my what you would call, I'm not a goalie coach or anything. To me, it looked like 3 shots that Sorokin probably should have stopped if he was at the top of his game. Brent Burns from the right point through traffic. Maybe the puck ticks off defenseman Mike Riley's stick. Maybe it doesn't. I couldn't really tell off the replay. And then Dmitry Orlov, another defenseman. So you got 2 goals from defensemen. He's, you know, upper left circle, and he beats Sorokin to the short side. And then the end of Sorokin's night, Sebastian Aho as the Hurricanes come up on a rush, just, you know, beats him cleanly, unscreened shot, high slot. If Sorokin is at his sharpest, I think all 3 of those are saved. So, yeah, it was, you know, and Patrick was so definitive about wanting to start Sorokin in this game. Yes, Varlamov, he gave up 4 of the 5 goals in Game 2, but I don't think, I certainly didn't pin that game on him. I know Waugh didn't pin that game on him. It was just a series of really bad breakdowns by the Islanders that left him kind of exposed. In this game, I think you do put it on Sorokin just because I thought those shots were stoppable. Now, you know, we're talking about Game 3 here, right? And this is the immediate issue just because, well, you know, the Islanders can't lose anymore. You know, they got to win 4 straight against a Hurricanes team that just does a really nice job of finding ways to win. You know, in my estimation, the Islanders probably played better in Game 1 for the majority of the game than the Hurricanes. Lose that game 3-1. You know, the Game 2 is just a weird game, but the Islanders did have a 3-0 lead in that, so you certainly can say the Islanders had their chance of winning Game 2. And then I thought Game 3 was the Islanders' best performance of the series so far. They were breaking the puck out really well. They had, you know, they had more offensive zone possession time than the Hurricanes, and I think more than they've had in the series. They were generating shots. They were limiting the Hurricane shots. They really were doing everything they needed to do to win, and yet they're on the short side of a 3-2 loss because, as Patrick Waugh says after the game, they could not generate the big goal when they needed it in the third period, and they certainly had their chances with 11 shots. That's the small picture, right? Season on the brink. As you wrote in your column off of this on the goalie situation, how does this play in the future? You've got Ilya Sorokin signed up starting next season on an 8-year, $66 million deal, and it's very clear that Patrick Waugh trusts Semyon Varlamov more than he trusts Ilya Sorokin.
Yeah, I mean, it was correct of Patrick not to address that issue after the game, because he said, I'm focused on Saturday, which is fair. The rest of us can focus on the next 8 years, because this is a weird situation. You've got one of the best, maybe the best goalie of all time, and he's got this, he inherits a goalie who just signed an 8-year contract, and there's a problem there. Now, Sorokin is certainly talented enough to work his way out of this, and maybe we'll all be laughing at this 8 years from now when he's a Hall of Fame goalie. It's very possible. But at the moment, I mean, why, you know, he made a big bet on Sorokin tonight, and Sorokin, you know, and it blew up in his face, and Sorokin basically made the coach look bad in addition to losing the game. So that's going to be fascinating to see what those guys, how those guys deal with each other this offseason. And, I assume it's fixable, but at the moment, it's not good.
I want to set you up for two things here, because you did the report, or at least you asked the question. But we opened up with the Ferrari and the Cadillac. Could you, you know, just set that up for the listeners? And, you know, what question did you ask Patrick Waugh that elicited this response? And just kind of explain what he was trying to say there.
Well, this is an example of when you have a truly great quotable coach or player, when you ask some vanilla, generic, boring question and they give you a great answer anyway. So it's not like I teed him up. He just went with it. But, I simply said, you know, how did the goalies react to this news when you told them you were making the change? He said, well, he hadn't given them the news. The goalie coach did. And then he just veered off into this great story. It was his father had texted him and reminded him that when he was in Montreal, you know, Francois Allaire, their goaltender coach, when they switched from Hayward, my Cornell class of 82 classmate, by
Brian
the way,
Hayward,
Brian
yeah.
Hayward, to Waugh, the goalie coach said it was like going from a Cadillac, you know, a nice, smooth, reliable ride, to a Ferrari, which is bumpy and you kind of never know what you're going to get. Well, it turned out it was smart, because Patrick Waugh was a great goaltender, and it turns out that maybe it's not the same going from Varlamov to Sorokin, which is what, you know, basically Waugh then made that comparison. Varlamov being the Cadillac and Sorokin being the Ferrari. And, you know, it sort of illustrated the point of, you know, it basically confirmed what the rest of us kind of say about these guys. Varlamov's this calm, steady, doesn't give up rebounds, very reliable. And Sorokin, you know, maybe is more dynamic, flashier, less reliable, but maybe with more upside, which I guess was the whole point of this move. And, you know, maybe that'll all be true again in the future, but it certainly is not today.
Now, the other thing is, and I know you had written about this in one of your versions of your column today. I don't know if
I've lost track of how many versions there were, but that's normal for a night game. We're not complaining.
So I'm not sure whether it showed up in your final version, but before the playoffs, you were on a conference call with some of, I believe it was the TNT, TBS, hockey analysis, including Eddie Olchuk. And could you sort of just go over, you know, what you asked Eddie and what Eddie said about Ilya Sorokin?
Yeah, Eddie's comment was one among the 200 words that bit the dust at my last deadline. But anyway, he made sort of an interesting point that in his opinion, it was possible that when you have this Hall of Fame goalie all of a sudden as your coach looking over your shoulder, that might be the kind of thing that might get to a younger player, to where Varlamov, who played for Waugh earlier in his career, shrugs that off and it doesn't really matter to him. Whereas a guy like Sorokin might look over there and see who his boss is, and maybe that gets in his head a little bit. Now, you know, obviously I don't know if that's true or not, but I just thought it was an interesting point that Eddie made, that and after what happened in Game 3, you sort of think, well, now, you know, maybe that really is going to happen. It's like, I mean, I've just disappointed the greatest goalie of all time. Like, what does that mean for me?
Yeah, you know, and I know Patrick was being answered post-game, Game 3, being peppered with questions about Sorokin and, you know, where Sorokin's confidence was. And, you know, I guess the implication there was what was Waugh's trust in Ilya Sorokin at this point. And Patrick, you know, he basically did not want to go there. This is not the time for it. And I guess I sort of agree with him. These are bigger picture issues we can address whenever breakup day is. And, you know, and if the Islanders don't win Game 4, that's coming up within the next few days here. You know, Waugh said things like, we win and lose as a team, and, you know, I was just trying to give the team a momentum change. So he did not pin this one on Ilya Sorokin.
Right, but the rest of us can. And the true answer is, again, I don't know how he'll feel in the future, but right now he has zero confidence in Ilya Sorokin, which is why he obviously has to start Varlamov in Game 4. And that, again, that's a problem. But, you know, like you said, and like Waugh is thinking, these are things that we can, that will be talked about when they're done playing. You know, the shame of the series itself is that, yeah, I mean, on paper, the Hurricanes are the better team. They're up 3-0. So, you know, if you weren't actually watching the series, you might say, well, of course, well, that makes sense. But the reality is, yeah, they've had two of the three games they outplayed them. The game that they got outplayed, obviously, they could have won that also because they blew a lead and then, you know, so, but, you know, whatever, that's hockey, Susan. You know, it's like they didn't win any of the games, and here they are. So no one around the league will be surprised if they get swept. But, you know, if you watch the series, you realize it's kind of a shame that they didn't make more of a series out of it.
Well, yeah, and, you know, and they still have a chance, I think, of making the Hurricanes a little bit nervous, particularly if they play Game 4 like they did play Game 3, yeah. Right? I don't know, you know, puncher's chance, whatever. You know, I picked the Hurricanes in 7 in this series. I believe you picked the Islanders in 6.
Okay, that's going to be hard now.
Yeah, no, that's I think that's mathematically impossible. But look, you know, the Islanders keep saying this, and I know it doesn't soothe any fan, but, you know, the Islanders just need to get one win, and then you see where you go from one win. Now, winning 4 games against this Hurricanes team, look, it's not, you know, statistically impossible, but whatever the difference between statistically impossible and statistically improbable is, that's probably where the Islanders are in terms of their hopes of moving on. I don't quite think this is 75, them playing the Penguins or, you know, anything like that. The Hurricanes are I don't see them losing 4 in a row, and particularly not with Frederik Andersen. Sort of had a bounce back game, I thought, today. I did not like Freddie Anderson's game in Game 2 at all, and this was discussed in the previous episode, but the Islanders get a 3-0 lead early in the second period, and then they only take 3 shots on Frederik Andersen, who couldn't control a rebound to save himself early in Game 2. Well, it was a completely different performance from Frederik Andersen in Game 3 tonight at UBS Arena. He's got to be in Noah Dobson's head right now, because he made, you know, without a stick in Game 1, he uses, you know, his hand side of the blocker to kind of get a paw on Dobson's shot from right off the right post in Game 1. And Dobson's in the same spot here. In Game 3, he tries to lift a backhander, and Andersen made a pretty good stretching, sprawling, acrobatic glove save there. And I got to think he's in Dobson's head. And that's what Patrick Waugh is talking about when I asked him what it will take for this team to get over the hump and actually get a win in this series. He said they've got to find that big goal. And look, if Frederik Andersen is going to play like he did tonight and control his rebounds a little bit better, and, you know, he stopped all 11 shots he faced in the third period, the Islanders can make all the improvements in their game they wanted to, and they broke out really well. They transported the puck. They weren't dumping and chasing. They actually, you know, were making clean entries over the blue line. Not all the time, but with enough frequency to be encouraged. And the penalty kill, it was 2-for-2 tonight. And the penalty kill's been good the last, you know, for the Islanders so far.
Well, Andersen did have a very strong performance, and it reminded me of something. MSG analyst Thomas Hickey, I talked to him before the series, and he said he thought the Islanders' biggest edge in the series was better goaltending. And he said, if there's ever a game where the Hurricanes' goaltending is better than the Islanders, that's a problem.
Yeah.
And it certainly was tonight, because Andersen was solid. That glove save on Dobson, Dobson like thought he scored. I thought he scored, because I was like, I was confused. Like, how did that puck get stopped? Until you see the replay, because that was a nice save, and he had one later where he was caught one on his back.
On Romanov from the left circle, yeah.
So, so like Hickey said, well, yeah, if the Hurricanes have the edge in goal, the Giants are toast. The Islanders are toast. And that's, I mean, at least in Game 3, that was the case.
Yeah. I mean, so now, you know, it comes down to a all or nothing, do or die Game 4 for the Islanders. And, you know, I asked Kyle Palmieri after the game about, well, how do you, you know, there's got to be a frustration level, right? Because in two of these three games, you probably think you've played better than the Hurricanes. And in the other game, you had a 3-goal lead and couldn't win. So there's got to be a frustration level. So how do you keep your resolve and Kyle responded, well, it is a steep hill. And then he said, using an expletive, that, you know, the Islanders have basically been facing a steep hill, you know, the last month and a half of the season. You know, not that you want to be in this spot, but the Islanders are used to the backs up against the wall. Now, again, I'm not trying to be Pollyanna here and suggest that they're good enough with their backs up against the wall that they're going to win 4 straight. But I would not be shocked if the Islanders win Game 4 and at least force a Game 5 on Tuesday back in Carolina. I don't know, Neil. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I certainly wouldn't be surprised. I don't know if I'd bet the house on it. But, yeah, no, It's them winning the series seems inconceivable. Them winning Game 4 seems very conceivable, because they're a bunch of veterans and they're going to go out, and especially on home ice, they're going to want to go out with some not getting booed off the ice like they were tonight. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all. But them going down to Carolina for Game 5, that'll be a challenge. Because maybe they've given Carolina their best shot, and Carolina will adjust and go back to being what should be the better team on paper. It was an interesting day that started with that great, you know, quote from Bois that none of us could resist, and that'll be in a lot of different columns and game stories you may read in Newsday and elsewhere, you know, afterward, because we can't resist that stuff. And, you know, I at one point, I was wondering if Waugh would, like, fall on the sword and say, look, this is on me. I made a decision. It didn't work out. That's the coach's thing. But, you know, then I thought about it more. If he does that, then really what he's also taken down Sorokin with him. So from his perspective, I think he made the right move, saying, look, just looking for a spark. It's a team game. I'm not talking about the future with Sorokin. You know, all of that was the right way to go for him. But for the rest of us, we can say whatever we want, and it was not a good night for the coach. And I don't think that means he's. I still think he will be a good coach for the Islanders. It just he wasn't today.
Yeah, you know the thing is, I mean, I know Patrick. You know, at the heart of it, I think he was trying to give Sorokin a little bit of confidence, because Patrick Waugh is a Hall of Fame goalie, and he was calling himself a Ferrari, yet he was comparing Ilya Sorokin. He was calling Ilya Sorokin a Ferrari too, which is something he called himself. So, you know, at the very heart of it, I mean, Patrick Waugh is certainly no dummy. He recognizes exactly what he has in Ilya Sorokin. Now it's a matter of, you know, refining that confidence and the two of them working together. You know, watching Ilya Sorokin, it was kind of very sad and painful to watch when he was pulled. And, you know, instead of sitting on the bench, he just went straight down the tunnel. He never took off his helmet, and then he eventually came back down the tunnel. But, you know, I don't think he wanted to push past all his teammates to get to his little backup goalie spot. So he sort of just stood motionless, hunched over in the tunnel. It was a good 5 or 6 minutes, and he never took off his helmet, which goalies usually do when they come off the ice like that. And you could just, you know, it was like, what do they call it? You know, the five levels of working through acceptance or whatever it was. And we were discussing this during the game. He was probably mad at himself, first of all. He might have been a little bit mad at Patrick for pulling him. And then I think the realization that, you know, his season was probably over probably hit him, because, you know, Varley's going to start game four. And if they win game four, Varley's going to start game five. So I think a lot of things, there were a lot of emotions hitting him. Ilya is a very pleasant, nice person who engenders people to, you know, want to be nice to him and to like him. That's what, you know, in getting to know him, that's what I've sort of gotten from him. It was kind of painful to watch just how much hurt he was in that moment.
Yeah, I wondered whether someone told him at the intermission, you know, that, okay, now it's time to go, you know, go sit on the bench like with your teammates, and it's kind of a bad look if you, you know, continue boping in there. But, you know, you're right. He had a right to feel bad. And, yeah, like, I think he was mad at everything, himself, the coach, the world. But, you know, that's part, like, Varley, talking to Varley after the game, He was just like, hey, you know, what are you going to say to Ilya? Well, I don't have to say anything. This is part of the job. Like, he was so matter-of-fact about this. It's like, yeah, this has happened before. It'll happen again. Just deal with it. Like, this is the job.
Yeah.
And that's probably why he's been able to be a goalie this long, is because of having that kind of, you know, approach.
Yeah. Just one other, well, I guess two other things I wanted to touch upon. Brock Nelson scores a goal tonight. They get a goal from the second line. Pierre Lee with a really great feed to Pierre Engvall. Pierre Engvall scores a goal. They get a goal from the third line. I thought Kyle MacLean had a really good game on the fourth line. If you notice, the one thing I'm not including yet is I didn't really see much from Horvat and Barzal in terms of, yeah, maybe they generated, you know, some zone time and they got in there. But, boy, when Patrick talks about needing a big goal, you got to have one of these guys chipping in, right?
Yeah, and there, well, it's what happens in the playoffs. You know, people say sometimes you have these unlikely heroes, but maybe more of the time your top guys have to come through. And yeah, they need to score. They need a lot of things. But yeah, that line scoring would be a good start.
Yeah, you know, still game four. There's still a little bit of life here. And the last thing was, you know, beyond, you know, the whole Ferrari Cadillac pregame stuff, the other thing that there was some debate over was whether Matt Martin was going to be able to play or not. And if Matt Martin didn't play, would rookie Ruslan Ishikov get into the lineup? Which, you know, nothing against Ruslan, you know, again, really nice guy, but for a rookie who's only played one NHL game to potentially be, you know, next man up, if Matt Martin was unavailable, that didn't make sense to me. I thought they would just throw, because they used Hudson Fashing on the second line instead of Simon Holmstrom. Well, why not just use Simon Holmstrom too? But, you know, they certainly, whether it was mind games or a little bit of, you know, coaching, trying to, you know, throw the Hurricanes off, I found it weird that, you know, Ruslan would be the next man up there. But the point I wanted to make was, you know, Matt Martin did get into the game. And, you know, game four, you know, if the Islanders do lose game four, is that the last we see of Matt Martin, not only in an Islander jersey, but in an NHL jersey? And, you know, he's coming to the end of his four-year, $6 million deal. And, you know, he's not said anything definitive all year. But, you know, just you sort of get the sense that this probably is it for Matt Martin. And if, you know, game four is it for Matt Martin, you know, he's a guy I'm going to miss.
Well, I'll miss him too. I'll miss him too. And I think most fans will. Yeah, I think it probably is the end of the... Well, I don't know. But it could very... Let's just say it could very well be the end of the road. And yeah, I mean, he's a guy with, you know, he's not as skilled as a lot of guys in the league, obviously, but he's made a really nice career for himself. He's been a fan favorite, and I have a feeling he's going to be one of these guys who's around the area, the team, the game, you know, for a long time. So I was glad that he got into the game tonight, and I certainly hoped that he is again on Saturday, because he should be allowed to go, if he is going out, to go out, you know, on the ice and, you know, especially at home. So, yeah.
Well, Neil, as we approach the 59th Street Bridge, I would say we're going to sign off, but do you want to sing a little Simon and Garfunkel here?
No.
No, you know, slow down. You move too fast.
I'm familiar with the song, but I don't want to sing it.
Yeah. Dootin' doo-doo, feeling groovy. None of this. We're not chiming in, huh?
No, I am fine with you singing it. I enjoy your singing.
No one knows.
I enjoy your drumming better than your singing.
Well, anyway, that is it. We're going to go across the 59th Street Bridge here. I am going to drop Neil in the city and then proceed on home myself. The Islanders do not practice on Friday, but they do play game four, do or die game four, on Saturday afternoon at UBS Arena. If you want to catch up with anything Neil or I say or write or do, it's on newsday.com/sports. And until the next time, happy hockey, everybody.